This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
There's news today that American consumers were very tentative in their spending last month, and in early trading, the stock market was dropping.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We knew lower oil prices would depress the government's calculation of retail sales for last month, but taking out oil prices, along with food and cars, and retail sales still fell 0.4%, and that is a nasty surprise. Overall, sales fell by the most in nearly a year. Julian Emanuel is Executive Director, U.S. Equity and Derivative Strategy at UBS Securities. Hello, Julian.
Good morning, David.
Things looking a little grim here.
The problem is that when you combine last Friday's employment report, where you saw weak wage data, with this morning's surprise retail sales report, it really calls into question the thesis that the U.S. economy would be able to continue to separate itself from the weakness that we see in the rest of the world's growth trajectories.
Now, we'll get to this morning's stock market in just a moment, but I'm thinking the volatility is going to stay for a while.
Yeah, there's no question. And we've believed all along that January would be very much like January of 2014, which, as you'll recall, was a volatile month, but didn't mean the stock market would decline the rest of the year. But we see a lot of event risk towards the end of the month. The European Central Bank is set to announce on the 22nd whether it's going to undertake quantitative easing. You've got the Greek elections on the 25th. And then finally on the 28th, the FOMC meeting, all of which are bound to continue to keep the market in an uncertain mode until we get more information.
FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, the guardians of interest rates at America's Federal Reserve. Julian Emanuel, UBS Securities, thank you. About a half hour into trading this morning, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had fell by about 180 points. That's about 1%. The S&P 500 was down 0.9%. The NASDAQ Composite, not as bad, down 0.4%, again in the first half hour of trading. College sports governing body has its annual convention starting today in D.C. The White House has asked NCAA officials to come in and talk about a range of subjects, including academic achievement by college athletes. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports, now that the college football championship game has come and gone, it's time for a sharp shift into matters of policy.
Jones bobbled the snap, now fires far side, Bennett, touchdown Ohio State!
That's Ohio State quarterback Cardale Jones doing what he studied on the field. But a couple years ago, he caused a media storm tweeting out what he didn't want to study in class, schoolwork. Quote, "Why should we have to go to class if we came here to play football?" Ohio State sports blogger DJ Byrne says it's a common sentiment among top college athletes that the schools should pay them.
They're corporations, basically, and they're raking hundreds of millions of dollars untaxed.
The NCAA is facing pressure from a student player union and lawsuits to increase payouts in the most lucrative sports. But, says Smith College economist Andrew Zimblist, go too far down that road, the schools might just as well
create a minor league football league, treat the players as employees, and we'll give them a market wage that better reflects the value that they're producing.
Throwing out the idea of student athletes who play football and also get an education for when the football's finished. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
week before Christmas, I went in to get some wrapping paper, and what I found instead was a Valentine's Day candy display. A little soon, right? Well, 1 month from today is the day associated with love and chocolate, and I'm sorry to point out that the world may, in the coming years, run short on perhaps both. Mark Schatzker is a contributing writer for Bloomberg Pursuits magazine. His article is called "Chocolate: Can Science Save the World's Most Endangered Treat?" Mark, what do you mean save? Endangered?
Chocolate, as we know it, is endangered. It's under a lot of pressure from two sides. Demand, we're eating more of it, and supply, we're growing less of it.
Talk to me about the supply side. What's holding back production?
Land that is used to grow cacao, which is the tree for whose bean we make chocolate from, people are starting to use that land to make corn, to make rubber. There's also disease threats. Brazil was ravaged by a disease called witch's broom. Global warming is also a factor. There's just a lot of pressure being put on the land we use to grow cocoa.
So what? Science is trying to think about this conundrum?
We've vastly improved our output when it comes to things like corn and wheat. But that's the reason to be scared, because every time we make our crops bigger, we ruin the way they taste. But Costa Rica, which is one of the world's smallest cocoa producers, years ago, they got hit by a disease called frosty pod in the late 70s. As they were improving to resist this disease, they also sent samples to a flavor expert to make sure they weren't choosing varieties that tasted bad. So what they've managed to do is get varieties of cacao that resist frosty pod, grow a bountiful crop, but also taste great. What's still scary about it is that not everyone is embracing what Costa Rica is doing.
I mean, you think of Africa, a lot of chocolate comes from Africa, but we tend not to eat just African varietals. Often the chocolate that we eat is a blend.
Exactly, kind of like the way Bordeaux wine is a blend. Even if Costa Rica is producing a tiny amount of excellent, excellent chocolate, if the world's biggest producer isn't, what's that going to do to chocolate? We need to think of it more the way we think of wine, which is not pretentiously and flavor notes and all that sort of thing, but just let's pay a bit more for the stuff that tastes good so that the farmers that grow it have an incentive.
Mark Schatzker's piece about the future of chocolate is in Bloomberg Pursuits magazine, but he's got a book coming out next spring about the blendification of food. It's called The Dorito Effect. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
And at many Chipotle locations, the warning, no carnitas. The chain has a pork shortage after an audit by the company found one of its suppliers was not abiding by standards, most likely standards regarding animal welfare for the pigs that it turns into pork. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.